So, as emphasized by the organizer, the most important part perhaps is the solving problem in the afternoon. So, please ask as many questions as you want here. So, it's not necessary that I go through all the program that I have in mind. You can ask questions and that will be, make the lectures more interesting. So, the topic I want to talk about is entanglement entropy. In quantum field theory. So quantum field theory is the quantum theory of a continuum degrees of number of degrees of freedom, for example, the quantum theory of the Maxwell field, as, to have in mind that. In fact, this has two abuses of language in the way it is used in the literature, this title, Entanglement Entropy in Quantum Field Theory, because first of all, what we are interested in is in the entropy of a region of the space. So we are talking about some region of the space, V, and we want to compute the entropy in this region. So it's not, one can think about entanglement entropy of any subsystem in some bigger system. So we are interested in some particular case of where the subsystem is given by the degrees of freedom in some region of the space. And the second abuse in the language that is used in the literature is that even in the most interesting cases, we are thinking in some entropy that is entangled entropy. We can also think, for example, the case of a thermal case, where this is not strictly speaking an entanglement entropy, but it's just the entropy in a volume. But then if I am going to talk about the entropy in some volume of the space, one can think, well, this we already know. This is entropy is an extensive quantity, so it will be proportional to volume. It's the textbook calculation of the entropy in, for example, a thermal gas. But how are these calculations of the entropy in a thermal gas done? If you look at the textbook calculation, you first put the system in a box. And in order to define the system in the box, you put some boundary conditions on the boundary. And then you put some, for example, some thermal state and take the limit of volume going to infinity. In this limit, the entropy will be proportional to the volume. And then you don't care about what are the boundary conditions you put here. So you can change the boundary condition, you will always get the same result. But if we are interested in the entropy of some finite region that we don't want to move to the large volume limit, then the boundary conditions will change the result. And in fact, putting boundary conditions means that we are putting something external to the quantum field theory itself, because you can change boundary conditions. And the idea is to study something that does not depend on something external, that depends only on the theory itself. So I am into a quantity that has information on the quantum field theory, on this continuous theory that doesn't have any external input. I will describe soon how one can somehow define a box without the box itself, without putting some boundary there. But of course, we will this problem of the boundary condition will appear in a different way, will appear in terms of some ambiguities given by some divergences that will appear because of the boundary. And we will try to work out how to eliminate these divergences and to keep to obtain some information of the theory itself. So this is the main idea of what I want to compute. then the question is why one wants to compute this type of quantities. What kind of things one can expect to obtain from this. And the idea is that as the entropy is related to the second law, is related to black hole entropy, is related to information theory, one can expect or hope to gain much insight on the structure of quantum field theories, computing these objects and understanding how they behave. But somehow is to describe the quantum field theory in terms of this entanglement entropy. Of course, the entropy is somehow a strange object in the building of physics because it's not an observable. In a strict sense, it doesn't mean that it cannot be compared to experiment. It means that it's not a quantum mechanical observable. It's not an expectation value of an operator. So, it's, in this sense, the description of this entanglement entropy in quantum field theory is something more theoretical than the usual objects that we use to describe the theory, that are, for example, the expectation values of operators, the correlation functions, or the cross sections in an experiment of scattering. So, in order to give you a motivation, I will draw here a diagram showing the connections of this subject with other subjects that are discussed currently in the literature or people is studying, is investigating. So the first thing is the black hole entropy. We know that this entropy is proportional to the area of the black hole, or area over 4g, g is the Newton constant, plus corrections. So it was first pointed out by Sorkin and Toft in 1986 that one can perhaps understand the origin of this entropy as entanglement entropy across the boundary of the black hole. So is black hole equal to entanglement entropy?
I think there is not a final answer to this up to now.
And also related to black hole entropy is the question of information loss. In black hole evaporation, when black hole forms and then it has an entropy and then evaporates, so it creates entropy from nothing. So is this process unitary or not? So here I will write entanglement entropy in quantum field theory. So the entanglement entropy across the boundary of black hole has also contribution of the fields that live in this space-time. So there is a relation in this sense. There is this formulation of entanglement entropy in holography, holographic entanglement entropy. This is a work by Ryu Takayanagi. In 2006.
So it's a recent work.
That what they do is they describe the ADS in the ADS CFT formulation. So you have a quantum field theory in some boundary of some space, and they describe how to compute the entanglement entropy of the boundary theory in terms of some geometrical quantity in the bulk.
So it gives a nice geometrical tool to compute entanglement entropy that in general is quite difficult calculation.
And this idea also promises to give much insight on how quantum gravity is
quantum gravity degrees of freedom are localized in space-time and is in relation to information loss. So this, somehow this holographic entanglement entropy is in the middle between these two things, because in the bulk, in the, this geometrical space-time is an area, is again the formula of black hole somehow. And it tells the entanglement entropy of the boundary quantum field theory. Behind all these things, well, there is also this. From the idea of the, that black holes have an entropy, one can have the one can obtain some, the so-called entropy bounds. That are supposed to be entropy bounds on the entropy of general systems, general quantum mechanical systems that come from the physics of black holes. and there is the Bekenstein bound. And the Busso bound. And one can, using ideas of entanglement entropy in quantum field theory, one can formulate and prove these bounds in the limit of weak gravity. And behind all these searches, there is this by now large part of physics that is quantum information theory. That is the idea that of describing quantum mechanics, understanding quantum mechanics in terms of information. So it's a generalization of the classical information theory by Shannon in quantum mechanics. This has, let's say, 20 years or something like that. So, and here there are many connections to different things here. For example, the area loss for entanglement entropy. Have been used to understand how to devise ways to approximate complicated quantum mechanical systems in many body systems using, for example, tensor networks. The density matrix normalization group, MIRA, things that we will hear about in these lectures. There is also a relation between tensor networks and holographic description of quantum field theories that is being researched in these years, these last 2-3 years. And there is also much interest especially because of holographic entanglement entropy, one has access to compute entropy, for example, of a region as a function of time with some calculations that are easier than the calculation in quantum field theory. One can study in precise way how entropy evolves in time, so study thermalization process in quantum field theory. Thermalization in time. For example, one puts some energy into some system and then the energy evolves and the system finally thermalizes. And one wants to understand how this happens in time. So
And this is much related to the question of the dynamics of entanglement. The evolution of entanglement in time. So this, we can draw lines from here to any of these subjects. So it's almost completely perfect graph. There is connections all over the diagram. Okay. So let me start from the very beginning. So let us start from defining entropy. Because there are like many different type of places or names for entropy. There is the thermodynamical entropy, the statistical mechanical entropy, the microcanonical entropy, the canonical entropy, the entanglement entropy, the Shannon entropy. All this entropy for us will be the same thing. But in order to describe what is entropy for a quantum mechanical system, let us start with a density matrix. The density matrix is the most general description of a state in quantum mechanics. So you take in general, it's a combination with some probabilities of some states, some vector state, pure states. And how this compares to the experiment? Well, this, in order to obtain expectation value of some operator, one does the trace or rho times the operator. So as it gives you the expectation values of all operators, all the information that we can extract from the theory is in this description of the state. This is equivalent to say that we are taking here a matrix that is Hermitian, positive definite, and trace one. So trace rho one means that the sum of these probabilities here is equal to one. In general, when one study quantum mechanics at first, and then you learn about the density matrix, it can appear that this description is somehow not central to the theory, because you can think of it as in the ensemble interpretation. For example, how you construct this state. You construct this vector state for some particular lambda, and some of the time, for example, throwing a dice, when the dice is one, you produce the state one. When the dice is two, you produce a state two. And in this sense, you have an ensemble of states with some probabilities each one. So somehow it's like the external noise in these probabilities. One can avoid that. This is because the experimentalist couldn't produce a state, the pure state, or something like that. But this is not the case. This noise, let's say, is built in the quantum theory. this classical noise is there, even if we have a pure state. And the reason is that, for example, if you have a Hilbert space that is a product, tensor product of two Hilbert spaces. So we can think here that we have two subsystems, A and B, that form the whole system. And then we have a state that we can represent in a basis, in a joint basis for the two Hilbert spaces in this way, such that the sum of phi ij square is equal to one. Then one can produce the density matrix corresponding to this state.
So this will be But then let us think that we are only interested in making experiments of operators that live in the region A. So in order to describe the state here, we can trace rho over the second space. So it means that we can have rho A, that is the trace over B of the total density matrix. And for doing this, we just make the trace in the second index here. So we put J equal to L and sum over J. So this will be sum over J. And so here I only have I and K indices. And this is, of course, sum over I and K. So, and then the new density matrix that is this rho A that lives in rho A, in general, is not anymore given by a pure state. A pure state is always meaning a state that is only in this combination has only one state. So all are zeros except one that is one. So in particular, one can check that using, for example, the trace of rho square. So this will be less than one in general, meaning that the eigenvalues of this density matrix are not 0 and 1. That would be the case of a pure state, but there are some of them that are between 0 and 1. And why one does the trace here? And one does the trace here because the state tracing in B is the one that reproduces expectation value. So one has this identity that is easy to check, the trace of the original density matrix times some operator that is an operator living in the Hilbert space A, tensor products, the unit operator in B, is equal to the trace of rho A OA. So this is really the state living in the subregion. When one can ask then, if I started with a pure state, why is that now I have some noise? Let's say my density matrix is not anymore pure. And one can think, well, the reason is that I don't have the full set of operators. I have a small set of operators, and I cannot test the full state in all its complexity. And so somehow this noise comes from the fact that I only have access to some subset of operators. And it's intrinsic to quantum theory. It's not that one has an experimental error or something like that. One can think in the reverse question. If I have a density matrix like this, that is given by the ensemble interpretation, for example, can I always think this comes from a pure state in a bigger space? And I'm looking only at a reduced set of operators, then the density matrix is mixed, is not pure anymore. And the answer is yes. Suppose you have a density matrix, which is a sum of, now I diagonalize the density matrix, so I have sum of pi in the diagonal form. You can always diagonalize because it's a Hermitian matrix. These are orthogonal. So one can think in the original space HA, where this density matrix lives, that is not pure because some of the values here are not 0 or 1. And then from this space, I can think in a space double size of this space. I make a copy of this space. And the state here
the pure state here I will take as the sum of square roots of PA I. And it's an easy exercise to show that tracing over the second degree of freedom here, I obtain the density matrix that I have there. This is called purification. So in some sense, I can always think my state is pure, and I don't know everything about it because I have a restricted class of operators to check the expectation values. Well, then this is the density matrix. Let us come to the entropy, von Neumann entropy. Yeah. Sorry, Okay. You can make the density matrix with that and trace and you get rho. Well, the von Neumann entropy is given the density matrix is minus the trace of the density matrix times the log. To the black one, okay. So the von Neumann entropy is this quantity that is a functional of the density matrix, trace of rho log rho. And so it's equal. How one can compute this is just minus the sum over the eigenvalues of this density matrix of pi log pi. So from its very definition, one can see that pi is going to be between 0 and 1, so log is negative, there is a minus there, so the entropy is always positive. And is 0 is equal to 0 if and only if the state is pure. This is because in the case of pi is equal to 1, this log will give you 0. If pi is equal to 0, then the log is bad defined, but pi is 0, so we take that as 0. Why we call this the entropy? And the reason is very simple, because it's equal to the original thermodynamical entropy. For example, let us take the canonical formalism, and then you have that the probability, you have that the state is given by some probabilities for different eigenvalues of the energy. So the probability of the energy EI is equal to the Boltzmann factor divided by the sum over all the Boltzmann factor for all the energy eigenstates. So this is e to the minus beta EI divided by Z. Z is a partition function that is the sum here. So if we plug, and then this means that the density matrix, how we write the density matrix is, this is like written the density matrix, these are the probabilities,
in a basis of eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. So we can just read it from there that the density matrix is B to the e to the minus beta h trace e to the minus beta h. And from here, we can just compute the von Neumann entropy. And what we get is that S of rho is equal, there is a log there that will pull down the H here, and it will give you some expectation value of the Hamiltonian. So it gives beta expectation value of the Hamiltonian. And there is also a log acting on the partition function here below. And then what you get is plus log Z. And if we remember from the formula from thermodynamics, this quantity, the free energy, is equal to E minus TS, the energy minus T times temperature times the entropy. And this quantity is minus T log the partition function. This is a thermodynamical formula. And you see that it comes that is exactly the same quantity here appearing here and here. So the thermodynamical entropy is identified with the von Neumann entropy. And if you take the microcanonical ensemble, so there we have a fixed energy, and all the probabilities for all the states are equal. So we have that the probabilities for different states in this energy shell are equal to 1 over n, where n is the number of states. And then the density matrix is the identity divided by n. And if you plug the formula of the von Neumann entropy, what you get is S equal to minus 1 over n trace log of 1, the identity over n. And this gives you log n, which is just the formula, the Boltzmann formula for the entropy is the logarithm of the number of states. Then there are some other entropies that comes into the game. For example, Shannon entropy. Shannon entropy is defined, if you have some, the idea is that you have some alphabet, 0, A, N, some letters that appear in some message. Each one appear with some probabilities, P0, PN, are the probabilities which, for example, in a text in English, they will appear with some frequencies that are different for each letter. And then the idea is how you can compress the message in order to save space. Suppose you have a message of length N, then you can compress. And so your message initially has, you need N log N bits, log 2, let's say, N bits of information to describe all these letters in your computer. And then the idea is that you can compress this message without losing information to N entropy of the sets of PI. So where this entropy now is just the sum of PI log PI. So this entropy will always be less than the log of, let's say here we are using the two because we want bits in the log base 2 to describe the entropy. So this is an operational meaning. to entropy operational means that is a solution of a practical problem. So it's a solution of a practical problem. How much you can compress a message is the answer is the entropy. And then we come to entanglement entropy. And for describing this, we have to, sorry, what's the time? I have a, okay. So I have 40? Okay. So entanglement, so we have to describe first what is entanglement. And if you look at the textbook, it seems that the only the good definition is of what is not entanglement. So it's like a negative definition. You have that a state. Suppose you have now two subsystems, A and B, and you describe the system with a density matrix rho IB. If the density matrix can be written as a sum over classical probabilities, ranging from 0 to 1 and summing 1, of states that are product states, in this case, we say that the state rho AB, AB is not entangled. Why? Because it means somehow that you are putting classical probabilities of states that are decoupled. So you can say that in this situation, there is nothing quantum mechanical between the relation between the two subsystems, A and B. It's a purely classical relation of the subsystem. Whenever it happens that the rho AB cannot be written in this way, we say that there is some form of entanglement, some form of entanglement in general. The case that is more simple to understand and there is a good measure of entanglement, a unique measure of entanglement, is the case where rho AB is pure. So the global state is pure. If the global state is pure, in order to be not entangled as here, it means not entangled, implies that the state is just a product. So, and one can detect easily when this is the case, because the global state is pure, just tracing over rho B, for example, and you get rho A, and this will have entropy of rho A equal to 0. So both of them have to be pure, because the entropy will sum over this. The global entropy is the sum of these two entropies. So in order for rho AB to be 0, it has to be that both of them are 0. So the state in A is pure also. And so in general, if the global state is pure, one can detect entanglement just by computing the entropy of just the subregion A. And in general, this entropy will be non-zero. And in this case, we call this entanglement entropy. It's interesting that this quantity, in the case that the global state is pure,
will be equal to the entropy of B. So if I trace A over trace B, I get the same. You get that S rho A is equal to S rho B and rho AB pure. This I leave it as an exercise. So we will call then the entanglement entropy to this quantity.
Sorry, is it that S of rho AB supposed to be zero rather than just rho A?
Yeah, rho AB in the case of the global state is pure, it's zero.
So is that just a typo then? I think you just had a typo.
Well?
I think you meant to say S of rho A equals S of rho B rather than S of rho A is zero.
No, here you said.
Yes.
No, I was thinking the case that rho AB is pure, but also that the state is not entangled. In this case, you have that. So you can detect entanglement by just taking the trace and computing the entropy of rho A. If it's zero, there is no entanglement in the pure global case. This entanglement entropy has also an operational meaning. It means, for example, let us also think in the global pure case, the mixed state of rho AB is more complicated, and there are many measures of entanglement that are different, and people do not know if there is a one unique measure of entanglement or one unique understanding of entanglement. But if the global state is pure, this quantity will also measure the number of, let's say, unit of entanglement. So if you want to describe the smallest small quantity of entanglement and you want to compare the different systems, it's nice to have a unit of entanglement. And this unit of entanglement can be taken, for example, of the one of the maximally entangled pair of two qubits. A qubit is just a name for the two-dimensional quantum system, for the Hilbert space of the Hilbert space of a spin 1/2, let's say. So one can think a maximally entangled state, something like this. And then this has two spins, one in A, one in B. If I trace over B, I get a two-dimensional density matrix that is completely mixed in the sense that it's proportional to the identity. It has the maximum entropy, and the entropy is log 2. So these usually are called EPR pairs of two qubits maximally entangled. So one can think in trying to measure how much entanglement is between A and B by, for example, asking the question of how many EPR pairs I need to share between the laboratories A and B, and then using operations that are only in A and only in B on some classical communication, how many EPR pairs I need. This is called the the entanglement formation. Or one can also ask the question of, given the state, the pure state across A and B, how many EPR pairs I can produce doing just independent EPR pairs? Can I produce just doing operations in A and B and classical communication? Classical communication means just that the guy working in A, the guy working in B, have only a classical telephone to tell something to each other, right? And in this case, this is called entanglement, entanglement of distillation. So how many EPR pairs I can distill from the state and produce pure EPR pairs that are decoupled to each other. And both of these quantities are equal to the entanglement entropy in this case. So it has an operational meaning in this sense. So let us come then again to the question of how we compute the entropy. This was an introduction on the different meanings of the entropy. In my situation, I will be interested in this entropy of regions in quantum field theory. And for our purposes, what all the meaning of all these things is just the von Neumann entropy. So I have a density matrix, and I want to compute the entropy. So in general, we have to do this calculation. So we have to diagonalize the density matrix. Find the eigenvalues and compute this. But let us think if you have a system, for example, let's say a lattice system with some sites, with n sites. Suppose we have only a spin 2 in each of the sites. Then the Hilbert space, the dimension of the Hilbert space, will go like 2 to the n. And the density matrix will be 2 to the n times 2 to the n. So we have to diagonalize a density matrix of this size that it will be easily getting very, very difficult because it's increasing exponentially in size with this, with the number of points in my lattice. So in general, this is a tough calculation. People have to do then in some interacting theories, have to do then some approximation, some well-defined or divisive approximation. Or you can also attack the problem directly in the continuum that has some simplifications in some times. But I would like to describe a case where you can also attack the discrete problem, and it's more accessible to calculations. That is the case of Gaussian states. Well, Gaussian states are typically the fundamental states of systems of fermions or bosons that have a quadratic Hamiltonian. But it can also be other states that are not a fundamental state. It can be, for example, thermal states or states with chemical potential in systems of quadratic Hamiltonians, and some other states also. The idea is that, for example, you have a system of canonical variables. It's called phi I and pi I. This is the field and the momentum, or let's think of this in terms of harmonic oscillators. Each of these variables will describe a harmonic oscillator. So we have phi j equal to pi I, pi j. The commutators are 0, and pi I, pi j is delta ij times the imaginary constant. And then we can also, we have this Gaussian state, and we can produce expectation values out of it. So we have this matrix that I will call Xij, and this matrix Pij. And let us consider, because it's the only case that we are interested in this lecture, the case where phi I pi j is proportional to the identity, so it cannot be zero because there is a non-trivial commutator here, so it has to be something like this. This, of course, can be more generalized, and it can be another matrix here, but I'm not interested in this case. That can also be treated. So, in this setup, what does it mean, Gaussian? Gaussian means that all higher point correlators, for example, if I want to compute this quantity, this expectation value, in general, it will be something completely different or unrelated to the two-point correlators. But in these Gaussian states, these correlators can be written in terms of the other. So this is the simplification. And we have phi 1, phi 2. So we have this rule that is called weak theorem. Or in this case, it's the weak rule, let's say, to compute correlation function of more points, of more operators. In terms of the other, it's just you have to do the two-point correlator between these two, and the other. And the same holds for many more, for any products of operator. For products of the pi, we have the same rule, and we have the same rule for the pi's and the phi's. So this means that we have a grid simplification because the whole state, even if it's infinitely, of course, the Hilbert space of these variables are variables of harmonic oscillator is infinitely dimensional Hilbert space. But it has this implicity that all the higher points are reduced to two-point correlator. So in this situation, one can produce an ansatz for the density matrix that has this property. And this was done by Peschel. In 2003. So the idea is that to parameterize the density matrix in terms of an exponential, that is quadratic in the fields. Or in the momentum and the field variable. And why is that? Because when we have an exponential of a quadratic expression, it automatically, this reduction to the two-point functions automatically holds. So we already have most of the information of the state in this parametrization. So in order to compute the density matrix that reproduces the expectation values, the only thing that we have to do is to compute this n and m in terms of the correlation of the two point correlations X and P there. So in order to do this calculation, we can try to diagonalize this thing. So and this is a standard procedure called Bogolyubov transformation. So we express the field in terms of some creation and annihilation operators. That we don't know at this moment what these are, and this number we don't know what they are, but of course we impose that this is just a linear transformation, and then we impose this A. We impose the canonical commutation for creation and annihilation operator. So, but we are devising this transformation in such a way that this is diagonalized, so we can put an answer that the density matrix writes as independent oscillator now in this form, e to the minus el. This is a number that is multiplying this density matrix to make it have a trace equal to 1. So what we are saying is that doing this transformation, we will convert the density matrix to something that is given by an independent state that is looks like thermal because this is the number operator, so it's proportional to the energy of a simple harmonic oscillator. For each of these modes independently. and we have several constraints on this construction that come from the fact that we want to reproduce the expectation values of the correlation functions there. And we also have that this commutation relation in terms of the original variables maps into the commutation relation of phi I and j. The fact that the commutation relation of phi and pi is the canonical one means here that these matrices that are real matrices satisfies that alpha beta transpose is equal to minus 1/2 as matrices. And we also have from the correlation functions, we can compute now. How can we compute the correlation functions? We have to plug here phi j, where phi I and phi j are given in terms of creation and annihilation operators. The density matrix has this simple form, so it's an easy computation here. And what we get from here is that this is alpha times some matrix that I will call 2n plus 1, alpha transpose, and this is equal to the matrix X. And the trace is equal to the matrix P. Where I'm writing here this n matrix, this n, is a diagonal matrix where in the diagonal elements we have the expectation value of AK of AI dagger AI. So it's the expectation value of the number operator. And this is given by E to the E sub K minus 1 to the minus 1. So this matrix is a diagonal matrix with the n, I in the diagonal. Okay, this is n. And here there is a matrix that is 2n plus the identity matrix. So these are the constraints that we find. So from here we can eliminate what is beta, what is alpha, what is n, and obtain all the eigenvalues and obtain how it looks like this operator in the exponents there. But as I'm interested in mainly in the computing the entropy, so what I will need is only this eigenvalues EL. So then multiplying these two things, it's easy to see that XP is equal to alpha 1/4 2n plus 1 square alpha to the minus 1. So this XP matrix that I can take it from the correlation function that I'm supposing I know is just some similarity transformation of this matrix that contains in the diagonal all the values of the energies that I want to compute. So if I take the eigenvalues, let's say, of this matrix, which I call nu square, the eigenvalues will be the eigenvalues of this. So I will take the eigenvalues of, because there is a square here, I can take the square root here. This XP that I call C, a matrix C, are given by one half hyperbolic cotangent of E sub k over 2. So in order to get to these numbers that are related to this simple description of the density matrix, I have only to diagonalize the XP matrix. And then once we have all the ELs, we can compute the entropy in this simple form, and it will be that the entropy is just the sum over different eigenvalues of the entropy of a thermal harmonic oscillator. We can go through this computation, and this is just minus log of 1 minus epsilon to the L. And written this quantity in terms, because of this relation, in terms of the eigenvalues of this matrix C, it just takes the form of trace C plus 1/2 log C plus 1/2 minus C minus 1/2 log C minus 1/2. So if we know the correlation functions of phi and pi, we can go here, compute the square root of this matrix, and plug it here. It's just always one can think in doing the thing with the eigenvalues, right? The function here is doing with the eigenvalues of these matrices, and then just summing over all the eigenvalues. And we compute the entropy. This is interesting now because because how large is the computation we have to make? The computation is diagonalizing an n times n matrix. See, suppose you have n harmonic oscillators that are coupled to each other, then you have to compute the correlation functions. And then just diagonalize this matrix C and obtain the entropy. as compared to the 2 to the n times 2 to the n case of the general quantum mechanical system, where n was the number of sites, and we assume that each point was only just a two-dimensional Hilbert space. Here it's infinity dimensional. So then the only thing that we have to do is compute the correlation functions. If we know the state, we want to compute the correlation function, and then from this machine compute the entropy. So I haven't said the key of the calculation is just that this particular property of the Gaussian state is given automatically by the fact that we express the density matrix as an exponential of a quadratic form. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry? No, it can be, there is a more general case where you have here some other things. So this is not the two-point correlation function more that is more general. There is you can put here some dij, and then you will have to do the Bobolyubov transformation again, and you will get some quadratic terms that mixes phi and pi's. I'm looking only in this case because it's more simple and is the one that appears in the vacuum state for quantum field theories, for example. Sorry? Sorry, you said which one is diagonal? Yeah. 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 Yeah, it's diagonal. Yeah. No, because this is diagonal, but it's not the unit matrix. It's diagonal, but not the unit, right? So. There is a similarity transformation in the sense that eigenvalues of this matrix will be the same as eigenvalues of this, but not. Well, then let us think on doing this computation for some particular quantum field theory model. So let us think suppose you have a Hamiltonian for a set of harmonic oscillators that is given in this form. With this as a matrix K and is diagonal in the momentum. In this case, you can compute easily what in the fundamental state of this model, what are the correlation functions. And these are given by phi I, phi j. Is 1 over 2 square root of k to the minus 1. And pi I, pi j immediately, if you know the matrix k that appears in your model, you make the square root of this matrix and give you the correlation functions. And with that, once you have the correlation functions in the whole space, and you want to focus on some region, in the region, you will also get this local structure for correlators. So in the region, you also expect the Gaussian state, and then you can go through all this thing and obtain the entropy from the correlation functions in the restricted region. So you will get, let's say, XV, the correlation matrix in some region V, suppose you have a, and P V, you make the square root, and this is CV. And then you plug this C in this formula and give you the entropy. No, these formulas are for the ground state of this Hamiltonian. Well, this is correct. The entropy is zero. And how do you know that? Because you multiply these two things here. This is just 1/4, the proportional to the identity. And then the square root is 1/2. And you plug it here. 1/2 minus 1/2 is zero. 1/2 plus 1/2 is 1, so the logarithm is 0, so it gives you 0 entropy, which is nice because you started with a pure state in the full space, you get 0 entropy. But now I'm thinking doing this Hamiltonian in some space, and then I'm thinking restricting attention to some subregion with some of the points, only some of them. Then I can use the same formula, but using the correlators restricted to B. Because the formula will be correct, because we have that the state also, if I'm looking at the correlation functions inside B, it will be Gaussian still, right? It will be Gaussian, so we have the same formula, but now the matrix is smaller than the full matrix of K here. It's smaller, and we have to compute first the correlation in the full space, and then restrict the indices of the correlator to live in this subregion V. And with that, we get CV and the entropy of the region V. Okay? This, because it's restricted, this will not be the case that C, that X times P is just identity. It will be something different. Well, and then we can play the game of computing this in some particular model. For example, one can discretize do I have here? Because Gaussian means that this property of the correlation functions hold. If I restrict attention to correlation functions with the fields phi I and j or pi, it restricted to some region, it will also hold because it holds in the full space, right?
And the second one is after the Beaulieu transformation, the fact that the state is written in this product form of thermostate is is a consequence or is a requirement that you are making on the state in order to find beta, alpha, and so on and so forth.
This thing?
Yeah.
You can prove that this is the case, but the way you prove it is just, let us assume that it's correct. Then we go through all this, and you evaluate what is the E, epsilon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you can prove that as the state is Gaussian, it has the two-point functions, the point correlators that is the same as the original state, then it must be the same because both of the states are Gaussian. So it means that all correlation functions of any operator coincide, the expectation value of any, of, and this means that the density matrix is exactly the same. So the density matrix is the one and the unique one that reproduces all correlation functions of the model. So once you have that immediately you know that is the right and unique density matrix.
Thanks.
No, it's not correct. This is not correct. No, in general, the structure of entanglement between different regions, let's say, is complicated. At least if one has to define what does it mean, multipartite entanglement, at least with some measure of it that can be done with the entropy, let's say, you don't find that it's zero. Oh, it's time. Oof. Sorry. Well, can I show some picture? Okay. So this is so this is a particular calculation of in a square lattice. You have a square. You take a square. You start with the Hamiltonian for the continuous description, and you discretize it in this way in the lattice. And then you compute with this method the entropy of a square, let's say, and you change, because we are aiming to the continuum limit, we have to take this, the size of the lattice is small, we have to think the size of the lattice is small, keeping the square fixed means that putting more and more points, or what is the same in this case that is massless, there is no scale, that we can fix the lattice and increase the size of the square. And we, if you make this computation, you will find something like this, that it grows, the entropy grows linearly with the size of the square. So you can think in describing a formula for this, having a term that is proportional to the length of the size of the square. So it's a the main term is proportional to the perimeter of the square. But if you do the calculations with some precision, you can distinguish here that this is not completely linear term. In fact, if you fit this thing and extract the linear term, you will find something like this. And this fits very nicely with the logarithmic term. There is a log with some coefficient that you can extract from the lattice. So you have that the entropy is given by this, the entanglement entropy of the square. And epsilon here is the size of the lattice, that in the limit of the continuum, we want to make this zero. So it means that the entropy of the square in the continuum limit will have some divergent term proportional to the perimeter that we call the area law of entanglement entropy. And we also have some subleading divergent piece proportional to the logarithm of the size of the square, plus some constant term. And then let us play on the game of evaluating different stuff in the lattice. Suppose now that I want to compute this thing that is not a square. It has some angle here. And then what I find is curious, because I find in terms of a perimeter that now is different from the size of the square, I have exactly the same coefficient as before. But the coefficient of the logarithmic term is the same as before, multiplied by 6 over 4 or 3 over 2. And this is because one can understand that, I'm playing with many different shapes, you always get that the coefficient here is proportional to the number of vertices. So here we have 6 vertices, while in the square we had 4. And all these vertices have the same angle, so they contribute to the same logarithmic term, each one of them. And we can also play in the game of doing the calculation of the square, but for a square that is rotated 45 degrees. And what you get in that case is that the area term is there, but the coefficient has changed. It's different. While the logarithmic term is also there, but with the same coefficient. So what does this mean? It means that the area term, it comes from the lattice. It has this epsilon term there, but it's not a quantity that one can say that means something in the continuous limit, because it's not rotational invariance in particular. So we say that this term, the area term, is non-universal. Universal means, in this sense, that it's something belonging to the continuum theory. It doesn't pay attention to the way you regularize it. It can be a lattice, squares, a different type of lattice, or can be other type of calculation with some regularization. Well, this is a tough question, right? How does it match the area term with the black hole entropy? It seems that this thing that is divergent in quantum field theory, because why is divergent? Because there are a lot of degrees of freedom around the boundary for a small distance scale, so ultraviolet degrees of freedom, and they all add up along the boundary. So it seems that quantum gravity somehow regularizes this in a nice way to give you the area times something that depends on the Newton constant. But the precise way, I think we don't know. And what happened with the logarithmic term? The logarithmic term is the same, so it's rotational invariant. So it's an object that really belongs, the coefficient of the logarithmic term, belongs to the theory in the continuum. It's what we call a universal term. The logarithmic term will be shape dependent in the sense, in the following sense. It will be all the parts of the entropy that are divergent. You have finite parts that we'll talk about, more about later, but you have divergent pieces. The divergent pieces, because of ultraviolet nature, it will always come from entanglement in the boundary of the region. And it will always be extensive along the boundary because these are like ultraviolet regions that do not talk to each other. So the area term, one can think that it comes from integrating one along the boundary. While in this particular case, the logarithmic term comes from something that is related to the vertices. So it's extensive in the sense that the logarithmic term for a square is this one, this one, this one, this one, sum, you have to sum. And for this object, you have to sum over them. If you have some angle that is not 90 degrees, then this number will change, the coefficient will change, and will depend on the angle. But it will always be the sum over the logarithmic coefficient coming from each of the vertices of the polygon. You can have a calculation indirectly in the continuum that, for example, is rotation invariant the way you will always find that the entropy will diverge. So in order to make sense, you have to put some regularization. You can use a regularization that is rotation invariant. You get some number, but some other guy come and do another regularization, and then the number that you get multiplying the area term will be different. Is the regulator. So you can think, for example, here, if I change epsilon to 2 epsilon, because I change the size of the epsilon, then C1 will be divided by 2 or multiplied by 2, right? So it's a different number. So you cannot extract some universal information from here. But here, if you replace by 2 epsilon, you will get some rubbish in the constant term, but the coefficient will be the same. That's all for today.